Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Indistinguishable from Magic Podcast with Rafal Loes and Chris Abramson. Chris and Rafal have learned not to take themselves too seriously. Fortunately, they take their profession seriously. This podcast features no-nonsense analysis, seeded with humor, in a way that lets us all laugh at ourselves, while we try to address some of the tough issues in security. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
What's up, friends? Welcome to Indistinguishable from Magic, the podcast that takes its name from the Arthur C. Clarke quote, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." Buckle in, because we're not handing out participation trophies, but you know we're going to call some bullshit. My name is Rafal Loes, and joining me is my equally grumpy co-host, Mr. Chris Abramson, and we like to think of ourselves as the Statler and Waldorf of cybersecurity, because, face it, the InfoSec Goat Rodeo could use a couple of clowns. So drinks in hand, let's go. Indistinguishable from magic, another episode of magic that is indistinguishable from reality. I don't know. I'm searching for one here, Chris. Help me out.
I know. We're I think you and I are both biding our time this evening because of both work stress and all the other stuff that has to go with life, you know, like getting COVID shots and, you know, reacclimating to public and things of that nature. So
yeah, it's been today has been a day, man. So let's kick this off by saying I have a bottle of something called the Leopold Brothers Cask Select Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It is a 50% ABV, aged 4 years. It's a local shop bottle, a barrel pick. It's a distillery established in 1999, so It's old enough to drink itself.
Yes, it is.
But just barely. And it's a pretty decent bottle. And I was going to pour. I started out by pouring a short 1 ounce.
until I told you our topic.
Yeah, and I'm considering just drinking from the bottle.
Straight from the bottle.
All right. So what you got over there?
You know, I went back to an old standby. I've got my Jack Daniel's Select. Small batch that I threw into the glass this evening. So you probably are looking at my surroundings going, "Dear God, Chris, your house got smaller."
You're in the bunker.
I'm in the bunker right now. Yes, I am. I'm hiding in my undisclosed location in the hopes that we don't freeze to death tonight because we're supposed to drop into the low 20s. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, screw it. I'll do it anyway. I was going to be polite, but I'm not going to be. It is pool weather here.
God, you suck.
Ugh. So, yeah, it's a little chilly outside. I think it's like in the upper 50s or lower 60s.
Oh, my God.
It was a nice day, sunshine.
I had this.
We've had the pool open.
I had this conversation with my wife earlier. I keep telling her we've got to move further south. I don't know how much more I can take of being told that it's going to snow tomorrow. I just can't take it anymore.
Well, you had fake spring. Now you've got second winter. Soon real spring will arrive sometime around May, June-ish.
Yeah, probably. I'm guessing right around to the enjoyment of my birthday, you know, mid-June-ish sometime.
Go.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, all right. This one's on you because you wanted to pick what topic?
I picked, is GRC part of security? Glazed over look on his face.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So where do we start? Is governance, risk, and compliance a part of cybersecurity proper? How about I get your hot take on this? Because I've got my opinions.
Okay. So I don't know why in the world I picked this one. Probably because I was reaching this evening. But no, there was a conversation that came up amongst a group of me and my peers earlier this week talking about the whole governance risk compliance model and how does that play into cybersecurity monitoring? And of course, you know, I saw something posted on LinkedIn. I'm not going to even reference it because it honestly doesn't matter. But it did get us all talking about where in the, I'll call it life cycle of things that we deal with, does the governance, risk, and compliance moniker start to kind of meld and or dive into the security space? And whether or not should companies have a separate GRC group program, whatever you want to call it, you know, overwatch outside of the cybersecurity function, because who watches the watcher? That was the conversation that we had, is who watches the watcher?
Well, okay, that's a good one. I was just thinking this was going to be an easy slam dunk, but now you're going to make it tougher. Fine, if you want to be that way. Let's break it down. What's GRC's main function, right? It's data, it's security governance. It's in the name.
Yep.
It's risk management and it's compliance adherence.
All things we run screaming from on a daily basis.
Yeah, pretty much every day. I think there's a, my personal opinion is it's been part of security for a long time. And in a lot of organizations, it's been sort of made to fit and then it's been proven that it doesn't. I think it would be wise in the interest of watching the watchers to have it aside from cybersecurity proper, because cybersecurity, now this makes sense in my head. If your cybersecurity organization is a policy and governance type of org, then it can live inside. If it's a technical function, then it has to live outside, maybe.
That's interesting, because we kind of went down the path. Totally went down the path of this, and it was definitely a side organization inside the larger organization. But yeah, I find it interesting that you brought up the small organization, because that really does open up the realm of, is security's only function in an organization the GRC piece, depending on your size? Because does the technical aspects of it live somewhere else? And so that's interesting. God, now you have me thinking.
I think a lot of the technical functions that are security, right? So there's the governance architecture, and the operation stuff we're already seeing is going out into partners. It's already going out into the various, so network security is going into the networking team. App security is largely going into the app dev teams. And what you've got left is an oversight function. You've got architecture and you've got, you know, the policy making organization. And I think GRC fits nicely in with that organization, because for all the arguments that have been made, I think GRC and compliance specifically is every bit of security as anything else. Because what is the point of security? It's to reduce risk, right?
Well,
to manage our risk effectively.
So you're title speaking, I do security engineering. So I think there's that's the piece that we all kind of got a little hung up on, especially in my peer group, was, but what about the technical function? Because you do have some groups and organizations that don't focus on the aspects that they need to. To your point, the application side taking app security. Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, we still watch a lot of stuff get by. So, but I guess what really kind of piqued my interest in the conversation was the watcher kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it really got my wheels turning of, you know, if you're in a security technical function, especially in a large organization, is who's who's coming back and kind of double checking you? And it really made me think about, like, there's not a really solid function unless you look at your IA team, your internal audit team, and is internal audit coming back and look, you know, watching what you're doing, or taking a look at what's going on in your environment.
Well, DRC function, I think, is wider than just cybersecurity. Do we agree on that?
Sure. Because I would, in my opinion, I think the governance side of it is really your architectural boards, the teams that are going to determine policy, alignment to policy, what those are, main factors are, and what drives that, variance processes, if you want to call it that, you know, exception processing, whatever that's going to look like. The risk arm, I gotta be honest, dude, that one completely eludes me. The compliance piece I get, but the risk one, I'm befuddled by that one. I get, you know, from a security perspective, we're here to reduce risk, or mitigate risk, but are we really the risk? Are we the risk determinators?
That was coming. So I think the security org, and there's a lot of these CISOs that I've met that have the GRC person under the CISO as a sub department or as a function. I think if GRC is meant to be an independent function, it would go under internal audit or under legal or under one of those, or under risk, enterprise risk, right? If there's an enterprise risk management, leadership role, the problem becomes, I don't know. I have a hard time separating out these technical and policy functions, because while logically it makes sense to me that one dictates the policy, the other one executes it, you get into these situations where, you know, one dictates a policy, the other one simply can't adhere to it's disconnected from reality. So to be able to ground those two in each other is important to me.
Yeah,
if you were the CISO, what would you do?
If I were the CISO, what would I do? I would push off the GRC function as fast as humanly possible.
Not a fan then, huh?
No, not a fan. Well, because I guess it comes down to who's measuring your capabilities?
Yeah.
Who's measuring you as the CISO that you're doing the job that you're supposed to be doing? Now, in theory, the board, you know, your board of directors or, you know, leadership group is probably making a determination of whether or not you're measuring up to what they expect to mitigate risk to the organization. But I'm still of the mindset that GRC function doesn't live in security anywhere. Maybe.
All right, so let's break the three functions of GRC, the three documented ones that are in the name: governance, risk, and compliance. So governance. Governance means, are the processes that you've instilled, are they being followed? Are they, you know, are they being adhered to in a manner that is verifiable and provable? That's an audit function.
True,
it is the definition of the oversight function, right? So I don't necessarily want that within security.
Nope.
Because then you can say undue influence, you can say conflict of interest, you can say all kinds of things, but ultimately, if you're trying to check that the organization is doing the things that it's supposed to, from a cybersecurity context, I'll caveat that, then there's no reason, absolutely none, that the governance part of it should be inside the cybersecurity organization. Risk is different to me, because if it's risk focused across the business, that's one thing. If it's focused across technology, that's another thing. And if it's focused on cybersecurity risk specifically, then the argument could be made that it lives inside under the CISO. But the compliance to me is one of those places where I still think it's vastly underrated, the influence compliance has to the business.
What do you mean underrated?
I think security people look at compliance functions and they go, it's just a bunch of check marks and paper pushing, and you know, there's no real value to it. And I would argue that some of the most prominent accomplishments that we've had, the most widespread adopted cybersecurity advancements, have come from compliance regimes, because those are the ones that drive business.
PCI. Okay. Oh, fair. Yeah. Okay.
If you can't do the thing, the regulatory thing, and you risk losing your business license, your ability to transact credit cards, or the ability to have a customer sign on as your customer, that will drive change.
Fair. I will say that the largest portion of the cybersecurity realm in the last probably 10 to 15 years has been driven by major compliance related functions. To your point, PCI is probably the best example. HIPAA scares me, but mostly because it's federal law. But PCI is probably the best example of a contractually obligated framework that was designed by organizations to drive security change, basically to drive security change in an environment.
Yeah.
Okay. So fair. I think compliance has a place in the world of information security. Governance, outside the realm of information security.
Yeah, I would say that I would agree with that. That gets my agreement, because you want to take the policy and the procedures and all the things.
Because how can you be the person that writes
for itself?
Yeah, how can you be the group that writes policy and then turns around and implements it at the same time?
Right. And then says, yes, I'm doing a great job.
We're secure.
Right. Don't break your arm trying to pat yourself on the back. So there is that, but what the opposite of what I've seen, and now I'm going to go back the other way and give you my kind of rebuttal to myself.
Uh-oh.
Double
backing on what he said. Okay.
Well, when I go back and look at compliance, the thing that I complain about the most, I'm eyeballs deep in SOC 2 at the moment, because I've spent the last couple weeks looking at SOC 2 and from every kind of
angle.
Analysis and angle down to the original doc, which makes you want to cry. And looking at it and saying, okay, how does my company support these things? And the problem is, look, compliance stuff has to be notably generic enough so that it's applicable for more than the 5 minutes that it's valid, right? It has to be valid for a longer period of time. It has to be applicable to broad industries. So you have to say things like, you must have a process for triaging risks that enter into your organization. You're like,
what does that mean?
Okay, that says that. That means nothing. Like, that's great.
Let me spend the next 20 minutes deciphering what you just said.
Right. Or let me give it to my lawyer so they can write a well-worded answer that says nothing but technically answers your question. Interestingly enough, I think that when the thing that I've learned is that the generic nature in which some of these are written is less about getting you to give the right answer. So this is like some of the tests I took in school, where it was less about getting the right answer and explaining what the hell you're talking about when you write it down. Right. So it demonstrates maturity by how you answer the question. They're not looking for a specific this ergo that kind of answer. They're looking for you saying, I understand what you're saying. You want us to have a process by which we intake, validate, review, triage, and respond to. Here's what that looks like here and why it's valid to my business and my business model.
So depth of understanding that you can, you can survive most risks that approach your organization. Oh, I said risk.
Dirt drink. But yes, it's demonstration of understanding. It's less about strict adherence to compliance and more about, that's what I think that what I write, what I, smack me for saying this, what I actually like about SOC 2.
Oh my God. I can't believe you actually said that.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I should drink. It requires you to actually demonstrate some of the things that that you think you know and explain them. So,
well, I think it,
when I look,
what? Oh, I was just gonna say, I think it forces you to be logical. It forces it actually for, as a technology practitioner, when it for most of us who have grown up in security as technology people. And then you have to, and suddenly you're thrust into an audit, or, you know, reviewing document, you know, reviewing, answering questions that, were probably written by a lawyer or a politician somewhere,
or both.
You have to actually think logically and effectively, not just say, I run an IDS.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're forced to have to explain yourself in a way that says, all right, do you actually know what the heck you're talking about? Or is this just regurgitation of what you are, you know, of something some you saw somewhere or something some guide from a tool said somewhere, right? So I wrote this. I'll be self-serving for a second. I wrote this guide about like how we how we help, right? Basically,
we as my
company.
Oh,
right?
Okay, got it.
So I looked at, all right, if you know which SOC 2 TSC principles we support in whichever one of our services we offer, and it forced me to look at it and go, all right, there's a reason and a rhyme and logic to this, because it isn't just about do you have, because you can, if you looked at just the reality of the questions, you can buy a bunch of tools and call it done.
You could,
but I promise you, you'll fail the audit.
You will,
which is the interesting part, because you have to demonstrate maturity of process around it. And it's not about technology. It's not about how many smart people you've hired or what it is that you've integrated. It's about how you actually reduce risk and protect.
So wait a minute. You're actually saying the shiny thing with the blinky lights and the neat switches won't actually save you in a SOC 2?
Also true.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yep. Still a false. so that's why that's my take on it. So compliance, there are companies that have entirely separate compliance departments, which I think is interesting. But I think if you take compliance outside of security, like regulatory capital C compliance outside of security, mm-hmm. you're doing the organization a disservice by disconnecting the how from the what and the what.
Okay. I think you're starting to hit on what we were talking about peer-wise earlier, but the how from the what is that? The what from the how? No, the how from the what. That's what you said.
Yes, you're separating the how from the what and the why. So the how is the I have a tool that does the vulnerability scan. It populates a dashboard. Yay! And I tell people to fix things. Great. How does that process work? How does that actually reduce risk for the company?
So where,
why does what you do matter?
Where's the analysis, the people process, the logic, the thought that goes into it? Because we all know tools don't solve everything at the end of the day.
They often don't solve anything if you do that.
That's
wrong.
True. But, good point.
But I think that this brings us into an interesting place, because the how do you protect my data question becomes very salient. Ooh. And it goes into, it's not how well do you do security? Because there was another thing on LinkedIn relevant to this. And it was like, you know, do you something to the effect of like, do you get bonus points for having, you know, compliance questionnaires that, you know, that are super crazy, you know, 500 page plus long. And I thought, you know, the actual value you're getting is inversely proportional to how long the questionnaire, how many questions you ask. I believe that, right? Yeah.
Well, I think we also kind of touched on that same topic back in our, when we talked about vendor security as well, too, in regards to the questionnaires, you know, how much value do you get out of asking yet the 232nd question?
Well, you should be, and this is the problem. This is the problem with that we're trying to get to as an organization, I think this is where we show a lack of maturity. We're in the drive to automate things, which I absolutely understand there's a need to automate. Right. Otherwise, we can't do things at scale. I'm not naive. But there's a point at which you have to understand that the more yes, no questions you ask, the less value you're actually getting in terms of, do I understand what's going on over there?
Fair. I think that's a fair view of it, because you're right. Once you start to take out the human element, the logic, the looking at the data and understanding what's going on, then you're right. At that point, you could throw a bunch of robots at the thing, the what, you know, whatever. And as long as it's a yes or no, and you know, and there's no if then or else in there, you're right. You can solidly automate it and walk away, with the hope something doesn't break.
Well, so. So I'll give you the example I'll give you the example that I'm thinking of, right? So there are all kinds of I think it's in the 6.0 section within PCI DSS about authentication, how often you have to rotate passwords.
Eight.
Yeah, I think
section
it's like every other day in the 700.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, okay,
section
fine.
Eight.
Yeah, whatever. I hate it.
I read it earlier today.
And I've spent a lot of time. In fact, my appearance on the Security and Compliance Weekly with Jeff Mann and his crew, we talked about like, oh my gosh, you know, this is, it's so outdated and it's so dated. And he's like, yeah, but it's not really about, at least it conceptually it's not. Now whether your auditor understands that or not is a different story. But it should really be less about.
Different topic for a show, a different day, whether or not your auditor actually understands you. Okay. Well, different topic.
Fair enough. But as long as you haven't hired that company that keeps getting sued, and you have an auditor that's decent and understands the industry and such, you should be able to say things like, okay, I don't enforce, you know, a 15-day ultra complex password policy for everybody because we have risk-based authentication. We do MFA in certain areas. We have tokens, and we do this and this and this and step up that. And we do, you know, we have a service that tells us when our passwords or people that within our organization have had their accounts compromised. And we look at brute forcing, blah, 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 blah. And the auditor should go, wow, that's so far, so much better than just, you know, a new password every 15 days that's 700 characters long.
True.
You're good.
True. So hold on. So we skipped over something because we talked about compliance and how that affects us. And you went on a rant about SOC 2s, blah, blah, blah. When was the last time you ever participated in a risk assessment, Raf? Because doesn't that drive exactly what we're talking about?
So, yeah.
And who does?
Yeah.
And the question, yeah. the big question, who does that risk assessment in your org?
Yeah. Yeah, who performs the risk assessment?
Who does the frontal lobotomy to figure out whether or not you implemented, you know, MFA, or you did, you know, XYZ and blah blah blah, and put a bunch of firewalls in and wrapped your data center in razor wire.
So risk, this is where I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm going to tell you why. Risk assessments are just as bad when they're done by technologists as they are when they're done by auditors.
Wow. Okay. I'm pretty certain you just threw yourself under the bus, backed it up, roll over yourself again there, buddy.
Yeah, that's right. But here's why. And the answer is simple. Risk is it has a technology component. It has a policy component. It has a business component. You know, if you're listening to this and you're going, you're nuts. Yes, thank you. But also,
that's why we drink.
Look at the Harvard definition of look at the Harvard Business School definition of the types of the six or seven, depending on which book you read, types of risks there are. There is not, I repeat, there is not a security risk. There's operational, there's financial, there's like a million different kinds, six or seven. But there is no cybersecurity or no security risk. Why? Because we contribute to the other types of risk. Operational risk. If your business cannot operate because your systems got hacked and you can't process credit card transactions, or your entire operation has been had their solid state disk drives encrypted and you're being held for ransom, that is an operational risk. It's also a compliance risk. It's also a financial risk. But at the base of it, it's an operational risk because you cannot – or it's an operational issue rather because you cannot operate. Right. When you look at it from a technology perspective, you're probably drawn to go, well, we need to have this thing in place and this thing in place, and I need to make sure my antivirus is in place. The question is, why? Why do we do any of those things? Because it mitigates one of the seven types of risk, of which cyber is not one of, and I hope it never is. Right. Because it doesn't need to be. It's a subcomponent or a contributing factor to all the others.
So I want to make sure, because I can tell you right now, I've sat in risk assessments and I guarantee you I've gotten literally asked about cyber risk, which I completely goes against the thought process that you just laid out there. So I think there's a really good question to be asked from a corporate perspective. Actually, this might even be a good boardroom discussion: is how is risk being determined, and how is it incorporating the parts of cyber that impact? Because I got to tell you, I really believe a lot of people skip past. I shouldn't say that because I'm probably reaching a little bit. But I'll bet you a lot of people reach past the operational risk, reach past the, you know, probably strategy risk or environmental risk and all that kind of stuff. And they reach right to, but it's a cybersecurity risk. And there's a small part of me like, you just giggled. You know why? Because you and I are both going, wait, but there's no such thing as cybersecurity risk.
Yeah. There really isn't. I'm trying to do a quick Google of this to try to locate all of them. I should be able to name all of them, but I can't.
Are you looking for the Harvard Business School definition of risk?
Yeah. The types of, and this doc only has their top four, and I saw the actual doc that had all of them in there, and I can't for the life of me.
It's hard to find. I actually tried doing it real quick too, and of course I couldn't find.
But it's operational, financial.
I think environmental is in there.
Legal. There's regulatory. That's four. Anyway, I'll figure that out and I'll post it later.
But I 100% agree with you that cyber plays into each of those, into the corporate risk structure in some way, shape, or form. Because to your point, if you know, ransomware, lock out a drive, your operations go in the toilet. Your distribution center's down, your call center's down. It's one of those just weird and goofy things. So
yeah, I think if we try to break things down, there's a tendency to if we're doing it within the cyber realm, there's a way to sort of get stuck in our own heads. It's what we know, so we get stuck in what we know. And that said, I think that we can easily, if the organization that you're talking about, GRC, is outside of cyber, then I think it makes it easier to, address in a logical and reasonable fashion, mainly because you're not sitting inside the technology organization. So yeah, I'll repeat that because I think it bears repeating. This is the equivalent of if all you have is a hammer, everything is a nail. when you look at risk through the lens of a technologist, everything will be a technology risk, and then you'll end up stuck in tools.
Well, yeah, you drive yourself right back into the do I have everything I need? Do I have the tools? Do I have And inadvertently you start going down the laundry list of things. Do I have firewalls? Do I have an IPS? Do I have a WAF? Do I have anti-malware? Do I have antivirus? And it goes on and on.
Yes, yes. And that list gets pretty long.
Oh, it does. Especially when you have to implement that technology. It gets really long.
Well, yeah, I mean. I think what we're learning here is, and whoa, we're going to be running over on time. This could get ranty, but I think I'm very comfortable saying that GRC could be an outside of cyber function. It would give the cyber group an opportunity to do what it does, and that is manage the technology and manage the technical aspects of it, while taking, as you pointed out, the headache of compliance and regulations and risk management at a operational and business level out of their hands and lets them focus on what they do. I'm all for letting technologists be technologists and not trying to teach them how to, put them through an MBA.
Yep, I agree. Well, I guess on that note, my drink is empty, Raph.
Mine was, but I refilled because I thought this would be a long conversation. Oh. It was. but like I always do, I'm going to give you the last word.
Risk. Because I'm going to drink.
Nice.
I think there's going to be a new security.
Folks, I want to hear from you.
A new security drink.
I definitely want to hear from people. I want to hear from people that run security programs, whether they are comfortable accepting GRC as part of the their org, because I suspect the answer would be maybe in the right frame of mind or with the right type of approach. I don't think generally the answer would be yes.
I would agree.
Wunderbar. Well, on that note.
Well, what started off as a slightly dry topic, I think, landed us in the land of SOC 2s and risk assessments. It actually ended up being a very interesting topic this evening.
Yes, yes. I think this is an interesting one. I mean, I know. Aha! Economic, compliance, fraud, financial, reputational, operational, and competitive. There it is.
Good job. You get an A on your Googling skills this evening, sir.
Yeah, I just popped those. I'm not sure if those are the ones. I've seen them slightly different, but
Different. There's a different variation. I do know there's a different variation on that one, depending on what your
I will definitely, and to close this off, I will definitely argue that there is no, security is not its own thing. It's not its own category. And on that note, I will leave you guys. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
All done.
Thanks for listening. Indistinguishable from Magic, another episode. Magically delicious and done. And we appreciate you guys listening. If you have a topic, hashtag IFM on Twitter. I don't know, tag Chris and I, will figure something out. Give us a topic to talk about that you like. Yeah, keep listening and keep liking and keep subscribing and whatever else that you do. Until next time.
Thanks, everyone.
See you guys later. Bye-bye then.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Indistinguishable from Magic podcast with Rafal Loos and Chris Abramson. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.